Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome back to the program James Lee Burke. He has a new novel out. It's called Creole Belle, and he joins us by telephone from Montana. Welcome back, Jim.
Well, thank you for having me on the show again, Vic. It's been 15 years or so that you have been interviewing me.
Well, you know, Jim, I just can't get enough of interviewing you or of reading your books. And,
well,
and I'm glad that we've got another Dave book, because at the end of the last one, you kind of left us hanging a little bit.
Yeah, The Glass Rainbow, which immediately precedes this book, Creole Belle, is really part of the same story. The two books actually make one book, a very long book.
Yeah, you give good value to your readers. This one weighs in at over 500 pages, this new one, Creole Belle.
Yeah, it was 875 in manuscript.
Is that both books together?
No, it's just the second half.
They actually edited 370 pages out of this?
No, it's just, I forget how many pages printed out, but the manuscript is always longer than the printed page.
I see.
The published page.
Now, is that a handwritten manuscript?
No, that's typed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jim, as this one opens, for those who read The Glass Rainbow, we know that one ended in a cascade of gunfire, and Dave Robichaux is in the hospital, and he's trying to recover from his gunshot wounds.
Yeah, his story starts in a recovery unit on St. Charles Avenue in New Orleans, and Dave is dwelling on not simply mortality in his own life, but the end of the era in which he was born.
And Cleet, his best buddy. These guys are the Bobbsey twins of homicide.
Yeah.
Cleet has also recovered. He's recovering from his injuries. And these guys, they're just an amazing pair.
Well, they're a very interesting team. And I'm sure I've mentioned this before. The two men are opposite sides of the same coin, and they form one character. One is the chivalric knight in rusted armor. The other is the merry prankster, the jester, the trickster out of folklore.
And the jester is Cleet.
Yeah.
And Cleet is such a flawed guy, yet the one thing that stands out about him is this guy has principles.
Yeah, both men do. They both subscribe to the same ethos, and it's the ethos of Chaucer's Good Knight, the knight errant, and each man is different in the way he expresses those virtues and in the way that he conducts himself. But basically, both of them are out of classical drama, out of the everyman miracle plays of the Middle Ages.
James Lee Burke joins us. His new novel is Creole Belle. And is today the official publication date?
Yeah, today it went on sale.
Wow. Well, what a treat to have you on the program on the publication date.
Oh, it's my honor. You know, you guys published me in the Antioch Review in 1970 when I was just about out of print. I stayed out of hardback print for 13 years. During the middle of my career, but you all published a story titled When It's Decoration Day. It was a story about the Civil War. It's one of the best pieces I ever wrote.
And that was in the Antioch Review.
It was, yeah.
You did have that I hate to call it a fallow period, but that one book, you had trouble getting it published, and when it finally was published, it did get some recognition, did it not?
Yeah, it was the Lost Get Back Boogie. I published three novels in hardback and when I was young. And, I mean, I was, I think I had three books accepted by the time I was about 32, I had three actually in print. And then I wrote The Lost Kitback Boogie, and I went 14 years before I was back in hardback print.
And was it LSU Press that finally put that back out?
Yeah, well, I wrote a number of pieces, novels, and I during that period, but it was The Lost Kitback Boogie that accrued the greatest number of rejections. I think it was the over a 9-year period. It received 111 editorial rejections, and then LSU Press published a collection of stories I wrote titled The Convict. And the following year, 1986, they published The Lost Kitback Boogie, and it was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, and it's been translated and published all over the world since that time.
Jim, would it be accurate to say that you're kind of stubborn?
Well, I can't say, but I learned an old lesson during those years when I could publish nothing, because it's very discouraging when everything you write is rejected. I mean, really, thoroughly rejected. I had manuscripts like The Lost Kitback Boogie and others sent back to me that had been vandalized. They made people mad. I had stab marks from ballpoint pens in the manuscript, you know, glass rings along the margins. The Lost Kitback Boogie actually made people mad. I got the worst rejection I ever received from a well-known editor in the East, and he wrote this letter to my agent, and this is the first line of the letter. I trudged through this weary tale to its dreary ending about these two F-ups. And I must say that, and then it got worse. No, I'm not exaggerating. That's what he said.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, I guess he's telling me he really didn't enjoy the book very much. Anyway, I cut 40 pages from that book before I sent it to LSU Press, but it's done real well since. I think it's one of my best books.
So these two that you're referring to are Dave and Cleet.
Yeah.
In the new book, Creole Bell, we begin with Dave in his hospital bed, and he gets a visitor, and the visitor becomes the Creole Bell of the title. Do you want to talk about her? There's so much stuff in this book, I hate to throw out spoilers.
Well, we meet a young Creole girl named Tijolie Melton, and she's a singer. She sings in a Zydeco place on Bayou Bijou in St. Martin Parish, Louisiana. And she's a great character. And in the book, she becomes emblematic of the innocence of Cajun culture, the world in which Dave Robichaux grew up. But we discover that Tijolie has fallen in with bad company, some very bad guys who have ties to this oil well blowout, which is at the center of the story, the pollution of the Gulf of Mexico. And, of course, the story coincides with some recent events. But the story tries to deal with the degradation of the wetlands in general, and Louisiana in particular. See, as Dave Robichaux says, if people would like to visit the future of this country under the governance of a petrochemical oligarchy, they should visit Louisiana.
Oh, my. That is a scary idea, isn't it?
Well, to my mind, it is, but I don't think I exaggerate.
Yeah.
I understate the gravity of the damage done in Louisiana.
So that is the backdrop to the story. Is in the background we have what's going on with the oil industry in Louisiana and the power manipulation that's going on with these billions and trillions of dollars worth of value, if we could call it that, and all the machinations that go on based upon that power, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Dave very often quotes other people rather than depend upon his own observations. And he quotes a Louisiana legislator who said, quote, "We should put the Exxon Mobil flag on the roof of the state capitol because everything underneath that flag is owned by Exxon Mobil."
Huh.
And that's a well-known quote made by a well-known man in Louisiana. But the point of the book is not to indict the oil industry. As Dave Robichaud says in the book, the problems we have with environmental degradation are related directly to another problem. We want cheap fuel, cheap gasoline. And the foreign policy that we pursue, which is neocolonialism by anyone's definition, is based on that need.
And another thing that you state in the book that all of us seem to want and need is money.
Well, it's at the center of most of our problems. In fact, as you know, the Bible says, it's at the root of all evil. And oftentimes homicide cops say, you know, homicide has to do with money, sex, or what's the other one? Greed, power, money, sex, and power.
Yeah.
Well, money buys the other things. It's always money. You follow the money, always.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's that expression of H.L. Mencken when someone says, "This is not about money, it's about money."
Mencken could turn a phrase.
Yeah.
No doubt of that. Well, without giving away too much, I think the most fascinating thing to me about this story was Cleet's relationship with a woman named Gretchen. And I don't know what you want to say about this, because there's so much that we could give away that we don't want to give away, but just to see their relationship was fascinating, because we're learning so much about Cleet and his past, and also about Dave.
Well, that's right. Many years ago, Cleet had an affair with a heroin addict, a stripper, on Bourbon Street, and without his knowing it, she bore his child. She'd gone back to Florida and Miami, and he discovers that he has a daughter, and her name is Gretchen Horowitz, and she's heck on wheels. Gretchen's a great character, but we quickly realize she's every bit Cleet Purcell's daughter. As Dave Robichaud says, an average day in the life of Cleet Purcell was like an asteroid skipping through Levitt Town.
Yeah, I remember that one. and you are so good at your portrayal of villains. And we were talking in our last interview about your most recent Hackberry Holland book and how your villain in there is just such an amazing villain. And here we have some more. We've got a guy named Hubert Donnelly. We've got a preacher named Reverend Broussard. We've got the Giancano legend in the background. We've got these Duprees. Now, these Duprees, the one guy, we don't think he's evil. He's a hero. I think that's very well done, how you make us think he's a hero.
Yeah, I think he's a great character, and he's probably the most villainous, genuinely iniquitous person I've written about.
What about Lamont Woolsey? Don't forget him.
Lamont Woolsey is hanging right in there among bad guys. He is a really bad guy. And then we meet his nemesis. For the listener, Lamont Woolsey is this albino fellow from South Carolina who has a lisp like a child and eyes that look like blue marbles in a bowl of milk. But he's a horrendous, cretinous human being. And he is kidnapped by the merry prankster of the mafia, a guy named Ozone Eddie Mouton. Anyway, Ozone Eddie owns a tanning parlor out on Airline Drive. He kidnaps the albino for Cleet Purcell. I better not say anymore.
Yeah. That didn't turn out happily.
But anyway, Ozone Eddie is a great character too. Ozone Eddie was a member of a low bottom 12-step group by the name of the Work the Steps or Die MFers.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, that's a real group. I didn't make that up.
Really?
That's right. There are two groups by that name.
Oh, my. James Lee Burke joins us. His new novel is Creole Belle. It was just officially published today. Can we give our listeners some general idea of the plot? The thing with your books that is so incredible is that we're never sure if this is a bad guy, a good woman, a bad woman, a good guy. The shades of gray are so gray that a lot of times it takes us the whole book to make that determination. Can you give us some snapshot of the plot without giving away any of the real goodies?
Well, that's it. You went to the heart of it, Vic. The real mystery is in determining what goes on inside the skin of most of the characters. To me, in life, the lives that we live in the real world, we find the biggest challenge in defining evil. Now, all of us make mistakes. I mean, most people are a combination of good and bad, and they're more good than they are bad. But there are those in our midst who are genuinely evil people, I think. But it's very hard to sort out what makes them the way they are. And I'm not talking about the miscreants, the people whose faces we see on the cork board at the post office. Those guys are they're facile character. They're poor surrogates for the real thing. Remember Shakespeare's great line, "The Prince of Darkness is always a gentleman."
Mm.
That's it.
Mm.
That's it. That says it.
And everyone has their little quirks. And after a while, we begin to expect that when Gretchen gets into any kind of extended conversation, she's going to start referring to some movie that she loved.
Yeah.
And I lost count of how many movies, but she's a buff.
Yeah, she wants to be a film director. And she talks constantly about motion pictures, just morning, noon, and night. But she's one of those people we immediately sense is a real artist, that it's an obsession with her.
And with her, movies had to have been some kind of an escape from the reality of a very difficult childhood.
Correct. She was an abused child. She was abused terribly. The consequence was that she finds her way into the life, as it's called, in Miami. In this case, she worked for one of the New York crime families who are also in Miami, and she got mixed up with some very bad guys in Little Havana.
Now, Jim, you've alluded to the fact that some of this is inspired by the classic tales of the Middle Ages, and I somehow found it appropriate that we encounter a device known as an Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Were those from the Spanish Inquisition? Is that where they used those?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it came out of the darkest part of the Middle Ages, or the, you know, actually the Renaissance. You know, supposedly the Renaissance's inception occurred in the mid-14th century, but the Inquisition was alive and well, you know, under Ferdinand and Isabel, under, what's his name, de Borgia, Alexander, Pope Alexander VI, de Borgia. You know, it was a very cruel time, but Dave discovers that there are instances, there are vestiges of that kind of cruelty, which is systemic and meant to inspire terror in people, extant in modern times. We don't think of, like, the chain of prisons that were used throughout the Middle East by the United States in the early part of this century by the administration in Washington. The term we used for it was rendition. But we, there's no question about it, what was done. People were taken off of planes, people suspected of terrorist activity. They were taken off of planes by American personnel, either CIA or FBI, I don't know, national security people, who then sent them to torture chambers in the Mideast. But we did it.
Yeah.
The Vice President of the United States was quite cavalier about it. It's no different from what I describe in this book.
Mm-hmm. There is that underlying sense in your books of the desire for some sort of social justice. And as readers, we see the horrors that you describe, but we also trust that somewhere along the line, Cleet or Dave or both of them or someone else are going to give it to the bad guys. And I've got to tell you, my favorite scene in the entire book involves Cleet's receptionist, the former nun. You've got another former nun in
here.
And I'm not going to say what happened, but, you know, as a reader, that was the most rewarding part of the book for me, just that short little vignette.
Holga, is it Holga?
I'm blanking on her name, but she's the former nun, and, and she's at home with her cat, and she's having a TV dinner, and we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's a great scene when the intruder breaks into the home of this former nun who was known as in the diocese as the mother of Grendel. That was the name the archbishop gave her. He used to refer to her either as the mother of Grendel or a reminder that the cross is always with us.
We also get more of Dave's background here, and we find out more about his dad, Aldous, and we find out some things about his mother. And Dave has a daughter named Allifair.
Yeah.
But that's also the name of his mother. And that's
right.
Also the name of one of your daughters in real life. And Allifair has a new book out, and I just sent her publicist an email yesterday, and I said, look, I'm talking to Jim Burke, and I would love to interview Allifair and kind of put them together.
That'd be great.
And last night, I went on to Facebook, and your daughter Allifair is pretty active on there.
Yeah.
And she was talking about something that she had just done, some sort of a web interview or something like that, and I dropped her a little note, and I said, I'm going to be talking to your dad online tomorrow, and by online, I mean on the phone line. And she wrote right back, and she said, I'm looking at my schedule to set up an interview, so I'm pretty excited about the opportunity to talk to Allifair about her new book.
Oh, great, yeah, and she does a very good interview, too. You know, she's an extremely good writer. Her new book is Never Tell, and it's, I think, her best. It's her seventh novel now.
Well, I interviewed her for, I think, her second book.
Mm-hmm.
And how long has she been doing this now? About 12 years?
You mean publishing? I don't think it's been that long. It's close to it, maybe just short of 10.
Okay. Well, I'm always excited when I have a new book from you because it gives me the opportunity to talk to you again, and I'm wondering what the next book will be that we'll be able to talk about.
Well, I got to get it written first. I'm working on a pretty unusual book now, but we'll see how it goes.
Uh-huh. But it's not a Dave, is it?
Well, I don't like to talk about
okay.
them too much.
Okay.
If I talk about a book, I don't write it.
I understand. I've tried this before, Jim. I've tried to get you to talk about them.
Yeah.
And I'm stubborn, too, so I know better. So what is it, the process for you? I mean, in your life, if you had to write down a list of priorities, would writing be in the top three?
Well, in terms of what constitutes a person's life, for me, it's family and friends. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you get down the track, you know, you get to the seventh inning stretch, that's what I think the conclusion you come to. That's all that counts. The rest of it doesn't mean diddly squat on a rock. It's all just passing through, and you don't take it with you. But in terms of my occupation, it's writing. It's the world of art. I never wanted to be anything else. And I do it all the time. I write all the time. I write in the middle of the night, late at night. I write first thing in the morning. I write in the afternoon. And I do it 7 days a week, and I never take any time off, not much at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, we appreciate you taking 30 minutes off for us, Jim.
Well, it's great to be on your show again, Vic. I appreciate it.
Well, it's always a pleasure, and like I've said before, you're my favorite guest, and you've been on my show more than anybody, Jim, and I hope I can keep it that way.
Well, it's always been a great pleasure as well as honor.
The book is Creole Belle. James Lee Burke wrote it. It's his newest Dave Robichaux novel, and it just came out today. Thanks for listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McKeonis. What a pleasure it is to have James Lee Burke on the program. We have interviewed him every year now for a number of years, and it's always a delight. And next week, we'll be talking to his daughter, Alifair Burke. She has her own career writing crime novels, and the newest one is called Never Tell. It's set in Manhattan, and it's a real page-turner. That's Alifair Burke, coming your way next week, right here in the Book Nook on WYSO. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.